Hello and welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. It's episode number 488. My name is James Gilmore, and joining me today to discuss all things pre-E3 2019, it's Matthew Ford.
Hello.
You all right, sir?
Yes, very well. Very excited.
Yes, I know. So we're probably going to dive straight into this, really, without a lot of preamble, because you've got to run away, A, and B, we've got a lot to talk about. Usually we do a big kind of E3 debrief, but this time we'll approach it from the top and name a few of our predictions of what we want to see, what we hope to see. But also, they've kind of released a bunch of stuff already that has a lot of reference to our particular area of expertise. I've used the words expertise there instead of interest.
In quotes.
insinuating that we know stuff, which is obviously a lie. So we are going to talk about the stuff they've already revealed at this year's E3, including all the details about Google Stadia and how it is going to come to your mobile devices, or maybe not just yet. We've got WWDC 2019 news, everything that Apple had to say, which also kind of factors into the rest of it, cause controllers and that. We've also got our hopes for the new games to be shown next week, plus a whole bunch of new releases, including the likes of Bubbles the Cat, Mystic Veil, Beep Boop, Bots, Apollo, A Dream Odyssey. We'll also talk a bit of kids and more. But first, the news. We'll start with Apple before we roll straight into the E3 stuff. So we had WWDC 19, which is the other Apple conference, not the one where they announce the new hardware and the iPads and the iPhones. This is the one where they talk software. So yep. Usually it's them blabbing about their new iOS update, which in this case is going to be iOS 13, and what it's going to involve. And in this case, it's interesting because this sort of dovetails into the stuff that's going on at E3, and particularly things like streaming and the Stadia. So what we found out is that we're going to get iOS 13 this year and an update for Apple TV, which have you ever used the Apple TV before?
I haven't, no.
No. See, I got one for the sake of a review. So we used it. We, you know, put a couple of games on it and ran it. Haven't really ever used it since. I set up one of my brothers. I went up to Scotland recently and he dug one out because we were trying to push stuff to the TV. Mm. And it was from 2010.
Wow. Like, can't still believe they existed back then.
I know. I wasn't aware that it went back that far. But the idea behind this is that obviously they keep updating these things every year just to keep stuff fresh. But the main interesting thing from our perspective is all about controllers, specifically compatibility with Microsoft and Sony controllers. So the new Apple TV is going to support PS4 and Xbox One pads.
Yeah, I mean, it's not that surprising from Microsoft's perspective because they've very much been like, we're going to put everything everywhere if we can. Mm. But from PlayStation, yeah, it's a bit of a shock.
Yeah, so Microsoft has always been making inroads, or recently been making inroads into iOS with things like Xbox Live being included in Minecraft and then Xbox Live coming to iOS itself. So we've already seen the first tentative steps. Now they've gone, yeah, we're going to allow our Xbox controllers to work with iPhones. So this is the beginning of the death, I think, of all those third-party MFI controllers. All those Bluetooth ones, things like the SteelSeries controllers and whatnot that people have been using to try and get, you know, to work with mobile stuff. And to be fair, it was always a very niche audience who were dealing with that because only some games are compatible with them. But they did exist. It's just the hassle of going out and buying yet another controller when you probably have got one, at least one, already lying around the house. This puts an end to that and opens the doors for games to be released which are built around the idea of control pads a lot more.
Mm. Yeah, it's interesting. And I think you are right in what you're saying. A lot of these third parties, knockoffs, as some of them are called, will start to ramp down. But for the likes of something like, I know it's not included, but the Nintendo Switch controller, the Pro controller, it doesn't have a headphone jack. So obviously controllers like that, people are still wanting to want them things.
It's originally going to go to the Apple TV. I think that's the first to get the compatibility. But iOS 13, which is the refresh we're going to get this year for iPhones and iPads, will also get this compatibility. The support will be extended to your phone. Mm. So in September, you'll be able to pair up your DualShock controller with your phone and play. This is sort of what we've been talking about for a while with the idea of, well, what do you do if you're bringing console games onto mobile and you're having to use touchscreens? And the answer clearly is you can't use touchscreens. There's too many controls. The only decent way to play it is with a controller, but you've always had to go out and buy an additional one.
Yeah, it's a step closer as well to what we're talking about with the PlayStation app. Is that the name of it? Yeah, you know, the one where you can screen to your phone and everything.
Yep. So now you'll be able to stream your PlayStation games to your phone and pair up your DualShock controller, and suddenly you are playing the PlayStation game as it was intended to be played, albeit on a teeny tiny screen. Other less kind of flashy things from the show. So iOS 13 is going to be cutting down on the memory it requires in order to install games. It's a small, unflashy thing, but also it's really, really useful. So even though base model handsets are now sold with like 32 gig minimum, when it used to be like 8 gig, remember that back in the day, 8 gigabytes on your phone? Still, those of us who use our devices for gaming, that stuff can fill up pretty quick. So the idea is that there is a new packaging system that they're going to be using, which can almost like halve the size of the game when you download it onto your device. So they used an example of a game like Grid Auto Sport, which is 1.67 gigabytes, and that's going to be down to 800 megabytes or something like that.
That's huge, to be fair, that sort of thing. I mean, it's good and everything for iOS, but it's more, obviously, when you get Apple's phones, the amount of other content they do install to it as like, you must include this, you must download this content, and that does take up a lot of data.
All the bloatware.
A lot of space, yeah, that sort of thing. So, yeah, this sort of thing's always welcome.
So that's good news. And the same thing with the updates. They're going to be apparently up to 60% smaller. So apps should launch quicker and obviously they'll take up less space. That's kind of nice. So good news there. The other thing they touched upon at WWDC was AR. So yes, they're carrying on with their AR business. We're up to AR Kit 3 now. And apparently they're adding some new developer tools, which is Reality Kit and Reality Composer, the idea that it makes it easier for devs to code in the kind of virtual 3D environment, which is all fair and good. The interesting reveal, which they used to demo this stuff, was Minecraft World.
Nice.
Yeah, so this is the AR version of Minecraft they teased a couple of weeks back, and they invited some people from Mojang up on stage to give it a demo. The demo consisted, as you would expect, of people wandering around a table with their phones pointed at it, building a little structure in 3D using AR, which looks exactly how you'd expect it to look if you've seen an AR thing running. You know, they're just popping stuff on the table and it looks good, it looks cool. Whether this is going to, you know, capture the kids' imaginations in the same way the base game did, or whether it'll just be a nice little bonus for people who want to mess around with it. Minecraft is pretty massive, and like Pokemon, AR has only worked in a huge mainstream cultural way so far when attached to a massive, massive, massive IP.
Correct. And I feel like Minecraft has the legs for something like this. I mean, yeah. Did you see the trailer for Minecraft World?
I saw, wasn't it like a pre-rendered thingy though? Wasn't it just people wandering around?
It was, yeah. And just, it was exactly like the Pokemon Go trailer, basically. Yeah. You know, when everybody was running around the world looking at Pokemon, then instead everyone was looking around for Steve.
Steve, exactly. Well, say, there's lots of AR content available on iOS at the moment, and you've probably not seen a lot of it, because I don't think it's burst through in quite the same way as your Pokemon. But snap the word Minecraft on it, and I think people may well pay attention. At the moment, there's an option to scale things, so you can actually put people within the structures if you want to, which apparently is an iOS only thing at the moment. So there's already some differences between the iOS and the Android version of this game, but we'll wait and see, you know, for more news when it eventually comes out. So E3, it's already kind of kicked off, isn't it?
Yes, it's very much started a lot earlier this year.
Yeah, we were going to do a kind of predictions of what we expected to see or what we hoped to see. And for me, at least, one of the big things I was going to predict or talk about was Stadia. And then yesterday, they just released all the Stadia information. So,
spoilers.
Must my job's done for me, makes it nice and easy. So, first of all, it's coming in November.
It is.
But that is the paid for version, the pro version of it, if you like. You can already pre-order it if you want to. And the idea is that you got the Stadia's Founders Edition incentive.
That's right. Yeah.
So what you'll get in that little bundle is you get your Stadia controller, which I saw over there at GDC. You've got a Chromecast Ultra, which is what you will need in order to stream the games. That's going to be the device you use. Not a Chromecast, a Chromecast Ultra only. Which I think loads of people have Chromecasts. Not so many have the Ultra.
No. How much are they separately?
I think they're about £60 or £70 for the Ultra version. Because that's the one that supports 4K. It also supports HDR. And that's very much what they're sort of pushing with this premium Founders Edition version of it, which is it supports up to 4K resolution streaming. It supports 5.1 surround sound. You get free games and you also get exclusive discounts. This all comes at a cost of $9.99 a month, which to me is the big win of their announcement so far, that it's under $10 a month.
It is. So it's, yeah, so it's $129 to get the Founders Edition.
Yeah.
And that gives you the Chromecast Ultra, 3 months of Stadia Pro for a subscription for the month. And a big thing which they were pushing, you can get a chance to register your username early.
I saw this.
Yeah. It was like, okay, right, thank you.
Yeah, I that's not going to sell it for me. That's not going to force me to pony up $130 just so I can get metal slag.
No, you know? but the one thing I did think was very encouraging was, so the 3 months of Stadia Pro subscription, if you and a friend both buy Stadia on launch, you can share that with a friend. So essentially, you can get 6 months free.
Okay. I read that as the idea that you, if you bought it, then you would be able to give your friend access to try it for free for 3 months, rather than both of you buying it.
Okay.
Because to me, that seems like the buddy pass is the idea. It's like an invitation for someone else to try it for free for a bit.
Okay. I think this is good, though, because this sort of explains how a lot of this with Stadia is still up in the air. Like, the actual games that are in the service that you're paying for a month, apart from Destiny 2, it's sort of pretty unknown.
Well, so, yeah, the other thing they announced was the partnership. So they're talking about which publishers and game developers are they going to be working with, because not everybody is going to jump on at the beginning, or even ever, necessarily. So they did come up with a list. So, yeah, you got confirmed that Destiny 2 was going to be coming, which is really a really interesting move, because apparently it's going free to play on consoles very soon. Right. So at the moment it becomes free to play on consoles. It's going to become available on Stadia with a subscription, so you're still going to have to pay for it. Which it's like a weird kind of backwards ass move to me. It's like, I can play this for free on my PlayStation. I don't need to have a pro subscription or anything like that. But that said, they did reveal a bunch of games which were going to be compatible and going to be coming out, not necessarily as the initial bundle, but certainly available. So games include Assassin's Creed Odyssey, which is what I played when I was over there at GDC, Baldur's Gate 3, Borderlands 3, The Crew 2, Darksiders Genesis, Destiny 2, Doom, Doom Eternal, Dragon Ball Xenoverse 2, Elder Scrolls Online, Farming Simulator 19, Final Fantasy 15, Football Manager, Get Packed, Grid, Guilt, Just Dance, Metro Exodus, Mortal Kombat 11, NBA 2K, Power Rangers, Battle for the Grid, all the Tomb Raider games, I think. Shadow of the Tomb Raider, certainly. Tom Clancy's Ghost Recon, Tom Clancy's Division, Thumper, very good game, Trials very Rising, good. And Wolfenstein Youngblood. That's what we've got confirmed so far. We don't know whether that's going to be the initial release and it'll launch with all of those, but we know that those things are coming.
I'm expecting another Google Stadia Connects in maybe August or something, where they'll outline all that.
Yeah, quite possibly. So they're obviously going to wait, because November, we've got until November for them to get this stuff sorted out. Or was it September? I've already forgotten.
November it releases.
Yeah, I was right. Okay. So that's kind of the big hype, exciting stuff in terms of, like, this is what they're announcing. And I say the price point is the most interesting thing, because under $10 puts it in Netflix territory, and that kind of makes sense. If it was $20 a month, then you're like, But you still have to pay for the bundle. This is all the premium stuff. What's then going to happen is later on, they're going to roll out the free version. And the free version will just be a case of you'll be able to fire up a browser or whatever you happen to have to hand, or, you'll have the Chromecast version, and that will run not at 4K. You'll be limited on the free version to maximum 1080p. You won't have surround sound options, no 5.1, and you'll have to pay for the games individually if you don't have the subscription. But that's where I think that you won't necessarily have to use the Stadia controller. You'll be able to use, an Xbox pad or a PS4 pad, and which are all suddenly now becoming compatible with mobile devices. What a coincidence. So that's the bit that's going to be giving it to everyone, because their promise originally was kind of like, it's gaming for everyone, it's no barriers. And then the initial announcement is, here are all the barriers. You need this controller, you need this subscription, and you need this Chromecast. No, not that Chromecast, not the one you've already got, the 4K one. And it's like, all right, this wasn't really what you were sort of selling, because what you were selling was you'd just be able to open up a browser and go. That's not the case, at least not at the beginning. That will come. And the bit that we were always interested in was the mobile stuff. So bring this onto our mobile phones. And they did announce that. If you happen to have a Pixel 3.
Yeah, not ideal. I mean, they've announced they're going to bring the service to other mobiles after the initial release and launch in 2020. But for the time being, if you haven't got a Pixel 3, I wouldn't pick it up. I mean, I'm definitely interested to pick up the free version and maybe buy a game or two and see what it's like. But yeah, for the premium one, it's a bit...
Yeah, so you need a Pixel 3, a Pixel 3 XL, Pixel 3A or 3A XL. They will all support Stadia at launch, Stadia, whatever, and that's it. That is the only way you're going to be able to play this mobile at the beginning. Other devices will be available. So we have talked in the past, and Google have said, yes, iOS will be happening. You know, Android will be happening. But we don't know when. And I can only imagine it's going to roll out later with the free version. So we're going to have to wait a bit for that little console games on mobile thing, certainly if you're an iOS owner. And there aren't that many people with those Pixel phones, I'm pretty sure. That's a fairly niche audience.
No, there's a lot of people, to be fair, that I've seen on the internet already with pre-orders locked and ready to roll. So hopefully that's a good sign for it and how it'll do long term. I mean, the biggest thing for it, I think, what's going is the pricing. It is very competitive, but yeah. It's more... if it will be able to attract the casual audience, I think.
That's the thing, because for me, all this stuff is, you know, $130 and then the super subscription service, and, you know, you're effectively buying the little Chromecast, which, you know, in that package is effectively the console. It takes the place of the bit of hardware that you use to play the games on. So it's, at the moment, it's a very cheap console that streams, which is what Xbox just launched, you know, their Xbox discless thing, which has already come down in price quite quickly. I've already seen bundles at the moment which are like four games plus the console for £160. That's not far off Stadia.
No.
And that's already a discless thing that you download the games digitally or you'll be using in future Microsoft streaming service. So suddenly this isn't as different as the standard consoles, apart from the fact that it's only streaming. The interesting bit comes in when I can open a browser, grab any controller that's nearby, and just start playing my game with the cloud saves. That's the thing that's also very useful. I was playing this at home on my TV, and then I can go to someone else's place, fire up a browser, log into my account, and boom, pick up exactly where I left off, or open my phone, do the same thing. That's the good stuff.
Absolutely.
But now, you're not going to get any of that till an undisclosed time, maybe in 2020.
Yeah, we're not quite there yet, but it is a step forward and we are closer to, you know, the idea of me. So an example is I'm going away in a couple of weeks. I think it was Crash Team Racing. I was thinking, oh, that comes out the day before. I want to play that. I want to take it with me. I'll have to take my Switch or PlayStation, because I think I was going to play on PlayStation, with me. But in the future, all I need is a controller, Chromecast, plug it in. Off you go. You know, that is fantastic. That is what we want, especially for people that are traveling constantly. What an ideal situation that would be.
Yeah. The other thing that they did flag up was the internet requirements for the different definitions of the game. So, for example, if you want to play at 1080, you need 10 megabits per second download. If you want 4K, if you're buying the pro stuff with the subscription, 35 megabits per second reliably. So that's kind of an important thing, because if you hit peaks of 35, if you've got like that kind of connection, then cool. But if it wobbles at any point, it's going to drop. So you're going to get this constantly. What I assume they're going to do is scale the resolution. So it's constantly, you know, like on Netflix where it kicks in at the beginning, sometimes it's low res, higher res, higher res, higher, till it's all buffered accordingly if you're in a bad area. You're going to see games, I reckon, zooming up and down the resolution scale as you play, which some games already do. They already do scalable resolution in games, but to avoid dropping the frame rate, I reckon it's going to be a lot more obvious on something like this.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, what's the internet like in your area?
Well, I've got fiber, so I pulled down about 70. So it will be fine for me to play 4K, provided, you know, it doesn't cut out and everything. In the scale of the internet, that's okay. There are people who pull down, you know, hundreds, which is amazing. But I've got a really good internet connection compared to the world.
Oh, yeah, especially across vast areas of, you know, the US, there's lots of people that really struggle with internet. I mean, it's just not, the capability is just not there currently.
No. So these people will be locked out completely, even from paying the 1080p version. They're going to massively struggle. I know people who have pulled down two. So the whole idea of, like, it's a borderless ecosystem, it's something that is available to everybody, and this was the promise. More and more it's like, well, it's borderless, but you have to have this and this controller and this subscription and this Chromecast and this internet connection. It's like, well, there's a lot of caveats to this, where it feels that if you don't have any of that stuff, it would be easier just to buy a cheap, you know, Xbox One S or something and get games that way. So I don't think it's quite the thing that they've promised. I think that's maybe going to come in a year or more's time. But at the moment, it all feels a little bit premium, and I'm not interested at this point.
So you're not interested, but do you believe in Stadia or Stadia? Do you think long-term this is going to survive? Is it going to be a new thing, or is it going to go the way of the Ouya?
No. I thought long-term, this is, whether we like it or not, my feeling is that this is the future. In the same way that the Netflix thing has replaced 4K Blu-rays, for example, have kind of already failed as a medium. And I say that as someone who buys them. I like them. They are not selling well. People aren't picking up this new 4K hardware thing because they just stream it. They don't care whether it's a higher bit rate and slightly better quality, which it is, on disc. And they don't care if ultimately it gets pulled from your Netflix or Amazon Prime library at some point. You can't play it because the convenience trumps all of it. So I'm going to continue to buy it. It's kind of, in a very pig-headed way, I've doubled down on buying actual discs because I do want them to survive, and I like having that slightly better quality because I do vaguely care about that stuff. But it's already dying. Mm. And I do believe that gaming is going to go the same way. I completely believe that this stuff is the way it's going to be in the future. Everyone will be sucking down every experience that they want to get, whether it's music, whether it's movies, and whether it's games. Ultimately, it's all going to be streaming.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, I think the future is complete streaming, and I think for the most part, physical copies, physical games will become like vinyl. You know, they'll become, as you say, the 4K collector's edition, stuff like that. I think there'll be an audience for it, but as you say, it'll be niche.
What I want to try is open up the Google browser on the mobile phone or the app, if they decide to do a Stadia app, and run that with a controller and see that working. That, for me, is the really interesting thing. But we won't be able to do that for a bit. So, shrug. What else in E3 were you interested in seeing? What about Nintendo's stuff?
Yeah, very excited for Nintendo. So this week, they announced everything that's going to be playable at the event. So Luigi's Mansion 3 is going to be there. The Legend of Zelda Link's Awakening remake.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember that.
Marvel Ultimate Alliance 3.
I've been seeing loads of, like, preamble. People are really pushing this.
Yeah, and it's a Switch exclusive, which is quite a big thing.
Okay.
And then you've got the likes of Doom and FIFA 20 and Fortnite. They're the other ones just announced currently. There's a big
Fortnite?
Absence.
What are they going to... What, a new season they're going to show or something?
I'm guessing so, yeah. I'm not really in the Fortnite community, so I couldn't tell you. But yeah, that does seem right, doesn't it? I mean, they just exploded a volcano. I know that.
Okay. I'm entirely out of the Fortnite loop. I'm not even going to pretend to know things about it.
The big absence from this list, but I'm totally expecting to appear, is Animal Crossing.
Oh, yes.
So I don't know if you're much of an Animal Crossing fan.
Not really.
No, that's fine. I got into it with my girlfriend, basically. She used to play it loads, and when we started dating, it was just a thing to get her back into gaming, because she's pretty casual. So I bought her a 3DS, and we both got a copy of Animal Crossing, and we played it for like a year straight.
Okay.
So this was like literally every day. I'm not kidding. This was New Leaf on the 3DS. So we're very excited for this new one, as you can imagine. Other games I'm hoping for is Metroid Trilogy port.
Have they floated this? Have they already said that this is definitely happening? Or is this just fingers crossed maybe thing?
It's fingers crossed. Supposedly in rumors and leakers and stuff, it's been created, basically. It's ready to go, ready to launch. Nintendo are just waiting for the right moment to, you know, give it the go ahead. Okay. And with the delay of Metroid Prime 4, I think this is an easy way to appease the fans for the time being.
The one that I'm interested in seeing is Doom Eternal, because I loved 2016 Doom. Mm-hmm. delicious. But not on the Switch, really. I'm not that fussed about it being there. And to be honest with you, I just want to play it. It's one of those games where they can show me stuff, but I'm going to see a man with a gun. I want to see him shooting demons and ripping their arms off and then clubbing them to death with it. That's what I'll see. I'm not really interested in like seeing all the different new gore animations or whatever. I just want it to be more of that, please.
Yeah, I think you'll be in luck there. I think that's what you're going to get.
Yeah. The other thing they're going to push is going to be Call of Duty Mobile, which is currently, I don't know if it's still in beta at the moment in India. They did their little closed soft launch test thing, which some footage emerged from. So I think they're going to show a lot more of that this time. Already the footage appeared online. I am part of the pre-registered group, but I'm waiting for my invitation because they've not done it in the UK yet. And I wasn't going to hack it and sideload it and all the rest of it to bring you like laggy, bad footage from India. So they've already put it up and running. It's very smooth. It seems that they are sacrificing things like visuals to maintain incredibly high frame rates. So they're talking about it running at like 90 frames a second. Whether that's on their extremely good phone and nobody else's, I don't know. But it looks kind of like, it looks like last gen Call of Duty.
Mm, yeah, I get that.
Which is fine, like, because, you know, you're playing on a tiny screen, so who cares? But people have broadly been quite impressed with the way that it feels and the way that it plays. It seems to be, you know, focusing on speed and all of that stuff, which is what multiplayer COD players anyway, really, really want. I'm not sure about the whole free-to-play aspect of it yet. I think the beta isn't focusing on in-app purchases or anything. It's just testing the multiplayer. It's testing the actual gameplay. So I'm waiting to see more and what their free-to-play plan is going to be and whether, for example, there's going to be some kind of subscription service, which is the kind of thing that they could do for COD because it's just so huge. And I think there are enough people who are fanatical about the game where they will just pay.
100%, yeah.
Whatever for it. So I think they want to set it up as a rival to things like Fortnite and all of that. And again, if iOS 13 comes out and gives you controller compatibility, then hey, suddenly you're going to be able to play COD with a controller on your mobile. And that's a whole brave new world.
That would actually make lots of sense as well with the free-to-play thing, because the new Call of Duty that's just been announced, so Modern Warfare, they've got rid of all the season pass and everything. So they probably want to be looking to make some money elsewhere.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay. I'm wondering how much sales of controllers are going to go up. Not through people buying them just to play with their iOS device, but through people now taking their controllers out of the house. Because they're going around their mates or they're going on traveling or whatever, and they're like, oh, I can now play whatever on my iPhone or my Android phone with a controller compatibility. Brilliant. And then they leave it in the hotel and come home and go, to buy a new one. I reckon there's going to be a massive spike in people just leaving their controllers around people's houses or on trains or in hotel rooms.
Yeah, if we see like a certain hotel, like, I don't know, like Trivago open up a controller business, we know what's happening. So two big ones I just want to touch on briefly that I think are going to appear, and I'm hoping, / predicting, The Witcher 3 on Switch.
The Switcher 3?
The Switcher 3, yes.
So, about this, how? I mean, like...
Wizardry.
I feel odd about that. I don't know why, because for me, I really, really like The Witcher 3, way more than I expected to. And to me, the thing that that game gives is a sense of scale. It's a huge thing, it feels to me. And it's also a very pretty good-looking thing, too. And recently they did the HDR update, and it's 4K, and it looks amazing. If they can cram it onto a Switch, brilliant. And the more people who can play it, the better. But is it going to be a slightly like ropey-looking version of it, which has to be massively slimmed down because of the sheer volume of content that game has in it?
I mean, when did The Witcher 3 come out originally? 2014?
Was it 2014?
2015? Maybe it must be a few years. 2016,
I think it's a bit
maybe.
After that.
Yeah. Okay, so maybe they've had a few years to obviously develop for it. I mean, I know there was a Digital Foundry analysis, which looked and it is viable. So that's obviously a good thing.
It was 2015, no, you're absolutely right.
It was 2015, yeah. I thought it was a while ago, yeah. Because obviously Cyberpunk must be coming out next couple of years. I think it's great because for someone like me, I can't currently invest all that time into Witcher because it's like 200 hours, isn't it, minimum, something like that. It's like supposed to be one ridiculously long, you know?
Well, you can play it, and I've completed it in less time than that. plenty less time than that. But there is so much in there that, yes, yes, you could easily squeeze hundreds of hours out of it without trying, plus all the add-ons and the downloads and the blood and whatever it is at the end.
So that's perfect for on the go for something like the Switch. And I think there is an audience there that would jump at the chance.
Yeah, well, I mean, more people who play it, the better. It's a really, really good game. It's just the way that it streams the game, the open world, because it's, the idea is you're not supposed to have loads and loads of like loading screens and things. And I think that the Switch doesn't have quite the same capacity for doing that as a PC or a console. So if it works, fantastic, like fair play to them. I can see it being a significantly scaled down version of it visually. But hey, it's not all about the visuals. So if they can get it working, fantastic.
There'd just be like a load more doors in the open world all of a sudden.
Maybe. What's the other one?
And just the final one I want to touch on. Of course, I couldn't predict about E3 without mentioning Smash Brothers. So we're expecting two characters, I think. Maybe one to be released on the same day. So the big rumors who I'm hoping for. So one of them is going to be Erdrick from Dragon Quest.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one, which I would kill for, which I think it's time, is Banjo-Kazooie.
Right. Is everyone crying out for Banjo-Kazooie then?
They are. It's time. But, you know, Banjo is Nintendo at his heart. You know, how good would it be? They release it and, you know, it just says, Banjo comes home. And, you know, it'd be fantastic. Microsoft and Nintendo's relationship is never better. I could even see Phil Spencer appearing at Nintendo's Direct. Like, just popping
just
up.
Just to hand over that one character.
I think they'll announce other stuff. So I could see, like, Ori and the Blind Forest.
Oh, yeah.
So I could see, because they brought Cuphead to Switch. So I can see them bringing Ori and other stuff. I mean, I can see Xbox Games Pass coming to Switch in the future. You know, they're very much in bed with one another. So, yes, if we get Banjo-Kazooie, I will be delirious. It's Banjo and Crash have been, like, since secondary school. I've been like, imagine if these guys were in it. And it's actually probably a reality. It's unreal.
All right, and well, I hope that you get the characters that you want for your fighty game.
Thank you. Me too.
Out and about this week, this will be a little bit quicker as we've already blithered on long enough. Let's talk about kids. This came out for mobile last week, but we only got hold of it this week. And this game, I say game in the loosest possible way, is part of a three-part art installation thing, a collaboration between a coder and a director, a video director. If you go over to the site, you can see there's a short film that accompanies it and something, I think, visual or text-based, and then this game, and this is the game aspect of it. And there's a video up on the PG channel of me having a little go on it. Now, how would you describe this, Matthew?
Bizarre.
Fair.
But highly entertaining. You know, the game is only 20 minutes, but yeah. I was hooked every minute, you know.
Yeah, it's got that thing that I quite like in some games or arty things where there's no instructions, it just throws things at you. And it's more of an interactive animation, I would say. So the way that it starts is that you wind up being presented with a white screen, and then there are these characters on the screen as outlines of human characters. And a couple of them got their arms out, and you're given no prompts, no instructions. You just kind of start jabbing the screen. And if you hit the little people, their arms pop out. They go, this way. And then you hit them again, and they change the direction. They go, no, this way. And then you got loads of different characters on the screen. And eventually, if you tap them all so that they're all pointing the same direction, they all wander off in that direction. But then there's a hole, big black hole in the middle of the screen. And they all start wandering towards the hole and stand at the edge of it. And then they stop. You're like, all right, well, what now? So you tap the screen. And then wherever you tapped it, the people closest to that area just kind of fall into the black hole. And you're like, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to do that. And then you pause a few seconds and go, nudge. Nudge, and you just start pushing everyone into the hole, because screw them, they're only digital people, and they all fall into the hole. And it starts cycling through a weird series of scenarios with these little stick men. And from what I can gather, it feels like it's about crowd control. It's about what people do en masse.
I was going to ask, what do you think, is there a deeper meaning to it? Obviously it's being called kids as well. I've been thinking about this last couple of days, thinking, what is it actually supposed to represent?
Well, if you go onto the App Store, I think the subtitle is Kids, a Crowd Control something. I think they actually mention it directly. But it's very difficult to find on the App Store. If you try and Google Kids App Store, you get nothing. They've made it impossible to search for. But once you do find it, yeah, to me, it seems to be all about exploring the idea of people following suit, of crowds and mob mentality, of everyone doing the same thing because the person next to them is doing it, because the person next to them is doing it, and so on. So you wind up with situations, screens, where there's a whole row of these people, just like a massive army trundling across the screen in this big column. And then another one going in the opposite direction underneath them. So there's two columns of people running in opposite directions. And if you put your finger on the screen, it's like your finger is a barrier. And suddenly everyone starts running around to avoid your finger. And you can redirect them to run into the other column. So the people running left to right, you can push them in and they'll turn around and start running right to left in the upper column. And then you realize once you redirect all of them to go into the same direction, that's when it moves on to the next scenario. And the same with people all jumping into the hole. Once they all do the thing, then you've sort of won, inverted commas, and it moves on to the next bit. Then there's really weird stuff where you're just kind of swimming through an intestine, it seems.
It's really unsettling, some of the noises that come from it, all the squelching and wet noises.
It's proper gloopy and odd. But as Matthew said, it's only like 20 minutes or something, and it's one of these things where it's fun to play around with and prod, because it's just an interactive... almost like a toy, you know? Mm. Like, you're not winning, you're not getting points, you're not shooting the man, you're not getting a high score, you're just kind of messing around with it. And to me, it made me think of that Totally Accurate Battle Simulator?
That sounds
been
right,
released
yeah.
recently, Tabs, yeah. Where you're just, you know, spawning soldiers on a battlefield and then pressing play and watching them fight for fun. And then just, you know, trying to see what weird combinations and what the engine will do with it all. And it feels a little bit like that. It's £2.99. Which I think for some people, for a 20-minute interactive art installation, might be a bit of a stretch.
Yeah, I think it's worth it. I think it's, you know, it's visually very cool. Mm. I'm not sure. Did you think it was funny at all in points? Like, obviously, it was just when the people were just shouting out, and you know, the operatic music would flow in and everything. I ended up laughing quite more than I don't know if I should have done.
Well, no, the reactions that made me laugh or the weird stuff was kind of that. Oh. Like discovery noises I was making. When there's an entire crowd filling the screen and you put your finger on the screen and then like release it. And then like a Mexican wave style thing ripples out from where you were pressing, where they all go, wah! And I was like, whoa, I didn't expect that. And so there's lots of little nice discovery things in it that work. But I can see people downloading it and it finishing and then being like, what? Was that it? But I think it's cool. And there's definitely a space for stuff like this. And it produced more noises of interest than some entire games have. So you can see the video up on PG. I've only done like 6 minutes of it, so as not to spoil it all. But if you like the look of that, you know what you're getting. So Kids is the name of that one. It's tough and hard to find, bear in mind. Other stuff that's out this week, it's a bit slim pickings this week. So we've got Apollo, A Dream Odyssey, which is a puzzle game which kind of mixes Mario Galaxy with... It's like Mario Galaxy if it was designed by hippies.
That sounds interesting.
So the way that it works is it's played in portrait mode despite what appears on the trailer, which looks like it plays in a landscape, but I couldn't get it to do that. And you take control of this girl who's wandering around globe-shaped worlds a la Mario Galaxy, and the idea is you're trying to unlock new areas by completing little sort of simple rudimentary puzzles. So in some cases, you're trying to find these glowing orbs, which when placed in the right spot will dispel the fog that's blocking your path. In some cases, there's musical challenges where you need to stand on the right notes in this series of colored pressure pads and play harmonies and stuff. And then that'll open the next bit. Or you need to walk across a path in the right order. So picking the right colors and then memorizing them so that you can make it through to the other side of the bridge. Well, all of which is fine. Sort of lost patience with it fairly quickly because it's on the wrong side of Twee for me.
Right, okay.
And it's that kind of, go and find your inner self. As if it was like, it feels homeopathic.
Ah.
Which immediately puts my hackles up. It's not. Like, it just has that feeling of doing this spiritual nothing stuff.
It looks stunning, to be fair.
It looks all right. Like, When you're actually playing it, it's a little bit more. It's got the indie game colours. It's got all the purples and the pinks and the pastels and all of that. But the character is very small on screen, but it's got that slightly vectory look to it. All which is fine. But the controls are irritating. So it's the bottom half of the screen is you moving the character around. The top half of the screen is you adjusting the camera. But you're playing it in portrait, so you're holding it in a slightly weird way to do that. But you need to also tap on the screen, bottom screen to interact, and tap on the bottom screen to pick stuff up. But it leads to a lot of mispressing. It leads to a lot of, like, you tap the bottom of the screen to pick up the orb, and then you put your finger on the screen to drag to move the character, and she drops the orb. Because you've tapped, no, don't do that. Pick up the orb, then move. And then as you're moving, I put my thumb on the screen to turn the camera, and she drops the orb. The camera turns, but it's like, you can't look around with the camera and run with an orb. Just stuff like that. And it feels a bit thin. And
I can just imagine you shouting at this woman in your place. Just pick up the thing.
But I like the arty, noodly, kind of games. I like my Monument Valleys and stuff like that. This should be right down my alley. It feels a little bit undercooked, and the airy fairy, like, go and find, unlock your spiritual center. No, I'm all right, mate. I'm fine, thanks. So, yeah, I'm 100% on that. So it's available on iPhone and on iPad and on Android. Apollo: A Dream Odyssey is the name of that one. I'm going to put a video up, because why not? Have you seen Bubbles the Cat?
I've seen the trailer.
Yeah. This is a simple platformer done in the, I guess, 16-bit style. This looks very Amiga-era graphics, in the same way that Nitrome do those Amiga-era graphics, but this is not a particularly nice version of that. I think it's kind of ugly. But the idea is it's a classic platformer, but instead of controlling left and right and whatnot, your cat just runs. If it hits a wall, it changes the direction, and all you have to worry about is jumping. So it's stripping it down for mobile, which is always a good idea. And the idea is that you just bounce your way through this world, collecting power-ups, and mainly you're just collecting a load of fish and then trying to get to the little flag at the end. So, you know, super simple, basic platformer stuff. They've pulled on in the way that the upgrades work. You get, like, different upgrades for your cat, and they can turn into bubbles and start floating through the air. And obviously it's all about timing your jumps right and doing double jumps. And then you get loads of hats. So you can put a dog hat on your cat. So it's a cat dog and stuff.
Sold.
Again, I'm not particularly overwhelmed by it. It seems to be doing okay. It's £3.99. I don't know. There are a lot more platformers I'd rather play than this. It's not like it doesn't work or anything. I just think it's kind of ugly, and it's just a bit of a mishmash of lots of other games. So it gets a shrug from me. I'm feeling like this is going to be a bit of an ambivalent week where I'm like, to pretty much everything. But so be it. Bubbles the Cat's the name of that one. That's on iOS only at the moment. Beep Boop Bots. Have you seen this one?
I haven't. No, enlighten me.
Okay, so it is a game where you take control of two little robots simultaneously. It's a portrait game. The screen is split into two, and you have two different robots, and they all have to reach their little exit tile, if you like.
What's it called again?
Beep Boop Bots.
Thank you. I just wanted to hear you say that again.
God, I hate you. And so the idea is these games work as one of those ones where you swipe in a direction and the robot will travel left, right, up or down until it hits an obstacle. If there is no obstacle, it'll whoosh off the edge of the screen and it's game over. So it's all about making sure that whatever action you take, your chosen action works for both robots and both sides of the screen. That's all it's about, which is fine. Actually, these games are not new. The mechanic is old as the days, but it's fine. I've played about maybe like 15 levels of it. It ramps up the difficulty and it introduces things like little globs of goo on the floor that stop your robot mid-track. So it acts as another obstacle sometimes. Again, it's not like overwhelming or amazing or anything, but it does the thing that it's doing perfectly fine. It's another premium game. It's £1.99. Very simple. It's like it's been drawn on maths paper.
Yeah.
So it's kind of basic, simple doodle stuff. It's a premium game, but there are IAPs you can buy for hints and things if you get stuck. It's fine. It's decently balanced. It's okay. It didn't blow my face off or anything, so.
Another shrug.
Say the name. I'm not saying it again.
Beep Boop Bots.
Yes. I win. That's currently available iOS and Android, if you want to take a look. Mystic Veil, I didn't play. This is a big old deck-building game. You're trying to restore the magical balance to mystical areas. This is from Nomad Games. And nice artwork, big old deck builder. I fired it up to have a quick go, and the tutorial was so bad. Well, not bad, but it's one of those ones where instead of teaching you a rule, saying this is how a card works, you drag it out from the screen here, drag it out, and you go, okay, now this is how the thing works. Now pull this onto this. It doesn't do that. It just flashes up text going, this is the cards, this is the box, this is how you do power-ups, this is how you do that. And it just kept going and going and going and going and going. And by the time you reach like the 35th pop-up, you've forgotten what happened in pop-up 14. And so you're like, I'm never going to remember any of this. You're just like, it's like reading the entire manual really, really, really quickly. Like, you got that good, moving on, moving on, moving on, without actually playing any of it. So I think the onboarding needs a bit of work. But I can't pass judgment on the game itself. Looks nice. Very nice interface and whatnot. And it looks quite involved. So cards themselves can be modified, where you have like switches on them. You can change the values of them on the fly. So might be good. I don't know. But you work out for yourself. Mystic Veil is the name of that one. That's another one, which is iPhone and iPad. And it is £4.99 or $4.99. So that's available right now. And finally, the one that I haven't played or even looked at is SCC 2019. And this is a little football game, which looks like it's been inspired by proper old-fashioned retro games. So things like your Sensible Soccer. So they're all really, really tiny on the screen. Which is sort of quite cute. It is free to play. I haven't played it. I think that Harry's given it a bit of a go, and he says it's actually quite good fun. It's only iOS at the moment, but you can go and take a look at that right now if you want to give it a look. SCC19 is the name of that one. Out right now for free. Okay, ran through it there. We will be back next week. We might have Dan with us. He's currently in Helsinki, by the way. That's why he wasn't joining us for today, but maybe we'll see him again next week. And we also wanted to give a quick shout out to our girl in the field. So Danielle, who runs
influencerupdate.biz.
She was nominated this year. What's the name of the awards?
So it's the MCV Women in Game Awards.
They announced their listings for folks who were being nominated, and in the category of Best Journalist of the Year, Danielle, her name in there amongst people from Kotaku, I think.
Yeah, Vic Hood from TechRadar as well. I've worked with
there
her.
You go. It's a great list to go and look at it, because it is a who's who of kick-ass journos and videographers and everyone else involved in the industry. And it's lovely to see one of our own up there. So massive congratulations to Danielle for that. Go and check out the site. She focuses, as the title suggests, on the YouTube-y influencer aspect of it and all the great things that they do and all the problematic things that it involves. And, you know, it's a good read. So do go and check that one out. That's probably it, isn't it?
Yeah, takes us right into E3.
Swellsville. All right, then. Well, we will speak to you once E3 is pretty much in the bag next week. We hope you see something that you like there. Maybe Stadia will announce something new, but I doubt it. In the meantime, take it easy. We will join you again soon. Thank you for listening. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.